2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Hello and welcome to Tacos Fast 40, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. If you like what you hear in today's podcast and want to come check out our premium content, including the VIP cheat sheet, the Domination Station lineup optimizer, the only optimizer in the DFS NASCAR industry to take dominators into account when making your lineups. It's a pretty awesome tool, and we've got tools for all the daily fantasy sports, MMA, baseball, golf, you name it, we've got it going on. So come check us out at DFSArmy.com, use promo code TACO on sign up, and that'll get you a nice 20% off forever. So DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO. I am back and I'm ready for this week's Quaker State 400 at Kentucky Speedway, a track that I am very familiar with. I've been there a few times. Went there last year and the year before that, and got to go to a Goodyear tire practice session last year, a few months before the race as well, to check out the new redesign. And I've got a pretty interesting take on this week, because we saw last year at Kentucky, the track just took a 180 from what it had been in the previous years. Before, it used to be just all green flag racing, maybe a spin out or two every now and again. Maybe someone has engine problems or something, but a really low DNF race. And last year, we saw just a ton of cautions, and they almost all accumulated right there in that turn 3 and 4. Now, people might think back and go, what was going on with that? Because the redesign happened in turn 1 and the entrance to pit lane and all that. Well, when I had gone to that practice session, it was a week or two before the race there at Kentucky. There wasn't many people there, but I was talking to some of the staff that had been there for a lot of the redesign and just know a whole lot. There's one guy, I forgot his name, but he sat there and talked to me for a while about the redesign, what all they were doing, and what problems they were having. And last year, they could not, for the life of themselves, figure out how to get the drainage on the track in order. And a lot of that mess happened right there in the turn 3 and 4. And it wasn't even water, necessarily. There was a lot of sand that caused the track to have some really inconsistent grip right there in that final turn before the home stretch and the start-finish line. And you saw it repeatedly last year. Just spin out after spin out after spin out right there. A lot of cautions last year. If we take a look at the numbers, we had 11 cautions and only 16 drivers finishing on the lead lap, with about 10 of them finishing 20 laps or worse behind. So a lot of pure DNFs, a few real crashes, as were the years before. We hadn't seen anything really like that. In the years prior to last year, before the redesign, you would only see about 3 or 4 DNFs, maybe like 5 or 6 people having engine problems or whatever, but not very many people wrecking out, and most of the cautions being for debris. Now, this was one of 2 races last year, along with Michigan, where they tested this year's aero package out at, and the year before, back in 2015, they also tested out the last year's aero package at the race there at Kentucky. They're not going to do anything like that this year, although this year they are going to be rubbing some tires onto the middle lane to try to circumvent all the single lane, single file racing that we usually see here, and maybe add some more passes for the lead. And that, along with the new stage racing, should add a bit of a bit more potential for lead changes than we've seen in years past. So that could be interesting. It might kind of backfire and cause the middle lane to be like the preferred lane, but they're trying to set it up so there are multi-groove racing going on, but we'll have to see come Sunday if that's the case or not. Just know that it might not be as dominator heavy as it had been previously. Now, looking back at historical fantasy scoring performances, it is pretty typical for a 1.5 mile track. We do have in this entire track's history, and mind you, this race has only been raced about 6 times. You've got two drivers that pretty much dominate the best performances here. 9 of the top 13 fantasy point scores in this track's history have been done by two guys, Brad Keselowski and Kyle Busch. They just absolutely dominate. Kyle Busch has scored more than 100 points twice, and during the 2014 race, Brad Keselowski dominated so hard he scored 145 fantasy points, leading 199 laps with 99 fast laps, which is pretty crazy. He also had 81 fast laps back in 2015. So these two guys just absolutely dominate, and it definitely shows in the statistics. You can see their average driver rating of 125 for Kyle Busch and 131 for Keselowski, which is just crazy. And that's with a decent sample size too. 6 races each, just absolute domination on their end. Keselowski has won half of the races at Kentucky ever. Kyle Busch has won twice. Right behind them, you've got Jimmie Johnson and Matt Kenseth, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, all over 100 on their driver ratings. So if you look at driver ratings and compare it to just, you know, the driver ratings that you see at other tracks, these numbers are a little bit high, and it might have to do with this not being a race that we race twice a year and the sample size being somewhat limited, but these driver rating numbers are a lot higher than average, and they're on all of the top guys. And what it kind of says is it's saying that one of the main parts of driver rating that helps boost your score is staying in the top 15 and then doing like quality laps while in the top 15, you know, things like that. So it really goes to show that guys who are in the top 15 are going to stay in the top 15 for many, many laps. And you see it all the time at this track, just from watching it. They instantly go single file, and there's not a whole lot of passing, to be honest. It's a really good, it's a good race. Just, it can get a little, you know, single file-y for a while. But they're hoping to change that a lot this year, make the middle line a little more viable. We'll see if that happens. But let's get on to the plays here. And before I get into the leaders and all of that, it's really important to note, Kyle Larson did not get out of inspection today during qualifying, with a few minutes left in the first qualifying session. Instead of advancing forward through the inspection camps, they made their way back to the garage. They knew they weren't going to be able to put out a lap. They're the only guys that didn't take a lap. So Kyle Larson will be starting 40th, and he is this year's best driver so far at any track type. Has done reasonably well on these 1.5 mile tracks. The driver rating of 110. So Kyle Larson is pretty much a free space. You could play him 100% since it's really hard to see him not posting at least like 70 fantasy points just from going from 40th up to like the top 10 where you figure he'll finish. Or you could play him with the DNF rate just right along there. That's what I like to do. And the DNF rate here is probably around like 20%, just a little bit under average there, average being about 25%. So about 15 to 20%. So play, you could play Larson 80 to 85% if you want to not go all the way in on him in case something happens to him or he gets, you know, a pit penalty or does what he does last year and go dive bombing into Chris Buescher. I'll get into that later, but he's actually never had success at Kentucky. He crashed in 2015 and 2014 as well, so he's never really finished the race. He actually came back after the crash last year and finished 19th, but it was nothing special. He really doesn't, you know, he doesn't have any lead laps or fast laps in his history. Only racing here three times and always messing up, but he had the fastest practice on practice two, fastest 10 lap and just fast lap average. The dude's car is amazing. Now, I don't know if that's because he had set his car up to standards that, you know, obviously didn't pass inspection or whatever, but nonetheless, Kyle Larson on lap one, it doesn't really matter. He's going to walk around the 10 guys in front of him and get up into the top 20, and you'll see him in the top 10 by halfway through the race, if not by the end of stage one. So Larson should be between 50 and 60% owned. So if you want to get some leverage on the field and go 80% or even 100%, you could do that. You could try a complete fade, but it's going to be tough because you're really going to need something to happen to him in order for that fade to work out. And I'd only give that about a 15 to 20% chance. Of course, that's pretty viable on a week like this where there's only one guy that went to the back. And really, he's the only super obvious place differential play with no one $8,500 or more starting farther back than 12th. The top guys really did qualify up top this week. So Larson is going to be perhaps the highest owned play all year over himself. He actually did this in Texas as well, started 40th, and we saw him crack 60% ownership in some GPPs. So expect for him to be around that mark this week, and do with him what you may. I recommend playing him 80%, but you could easily go 100% and just call it a five-driver race this week, or you could try and fade him or go underweight on him, and maybe you'll have some success that way, but it's going to be hard to root for him to crash, considering that he has finished 14 of 16 races this year on the lead lap. His problems of crashing from last year and years past really have seemed to gone away as he's turned into an elite driver. Now, going up to the front here, for like the fourth time in 5 weeks, I think, it's either 4 out of 5 or 3 out of 4. I think it's 4 out of the last 5 weeks. We've had Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr. in the front row. And this time it is Kyle Busch with the pole and the first pit stall, with Martin Truex Jr. right behind him. So Kyle Busch obviously just dominates this track. He's really good, but Martin Truex Jr., while never having a finish better than 8th place here and always seeming to put out middling results at Kentucky, he's still the 1.5-mile intermediate track god. Just to compare the driver ratings at 1.5-mile tracks this year, Kyle Busch has a driver rating of 92.6, and Martin Truex Jr. Beats him by 36 with a 128.6 driver rating on 1.5-mile tracks this year, and that's with DNFs adjusted into it. So this creates a bit of a problem. Do you go with the track history and the first pit stall and choosing your lane in the beginning and all that with Kyle Busch, or do you go with Martin Truex Jr.? More than likely, you're going to have to like split it up between the two of them or take a bold stance. Kyle Busch was 5th fastest in both practices, while Martin Truex Jr. is 2nd fastest in both practices, only being behind Jamie McMurray and Kyle Larson in those practices. So Truex looks like he's going to have the car to beat here, but Kyle Busch really knows his way around Kentucky. I'm going to lean a little bit towards Kyle Busch here because he truly is like absolutely dominant here. I'm gonna put him and Keselowski together just because they just know what they're doing at this track, and it's so consistent year after year, and it's been pretty consistent year after year with Truex Jr. as well, of just mediocrity at this track. No real laps led, a third of the fast laps of Kyle Busch, and I think that Kyle Busch just has a slight advantage this week. With you got to assume that he'll start off with the lead, and we've seen it year after year after year here. The pole sitter is going to jump out to a lead, get the first like 50 laps led and a really large chunk of fast laps to go with it. If there's no caution until, you know, the first like pit window or whatever, he's going to grab the first like 30 to 40 fast laps. So it's going to be important to get those fast laps. And we've seen it with, you know, Keselowski, the 1 year had almost 100 fast laps. The leader here historically has averaged 80 lead laps and 40 fast laps. That's for pole sitters here. While second place has only averaged 54 lead laps and 26 fast laps, which are comparable numbers to third place starters who've averaged 48 lead laps and 21 fast laps. Now, sure, those probably point to specific data points where, like, Kyle Busch started third or Keselowski started second or whatever, but we've seen, like, I've seen it here year after year, the pole sitter usually is just the way to go. Now, thinking about ownership, this is where it really matters. I kind of have them dead even with a slight lean towards Truex. I think the practice times are going to tilt it a little bit in the favor of Truex. I know he's 200 more, and I know he's starting second, but the word is out with Truex. Everyone knows that 1.5-mile tracks are his bread and butter, so I'm going to personally lean a little more Kyle Busch, but you can't go wrong with Truex, honestly. Nothing wrong with that. And I think these two, like, I think you need a share of either or, if not both, in almost every lineup. Maybe make a few without them, but the guys behind them really are not threats to lead laps. Matt Kenseth has not led many laps this year. He's not led a single lap on an intermediate track this year. The same with Jamie McMurray right behind him. He usually always qualifies like fourth and finishes like fifth. You know, he's always there. Same team as Larson and everything, but he's still never dominated. He's like no threat to dominate. Pretty much does this year after year. And then Hamlin and Blaney. I know we've seen Blaney dominate these 1.5s, and I'll kind of get to him later because I do like him a bit this week. But I don't think he'll be a threat in the first stage, at least, to lead laps. So you have to go back to Harvick and Jimmy Johnson starting 7th and 8th before you have some real threats, and then, of course, Brad Keselowski back in 10th. But unless something crazy happens, the dominator here is either going to be Kyle Busch or Martin Truex Jr. for the first stage. Both those guys have a really strong case. One other thing I could see happening here is them kind of splitting, like Martin Truex Jr. kind of passing Kyle Busch after the first, or in the middle of the first stage, and then onto the second stage. We get into like weird pit strategies and the fast laps go away and all that. But I like Truex and Busch there, and they're going to be popular. The guys right underneath them are all pretty solid fades. Have them projected like low teens in the ownership here. Kenseth, who has won here, has never finished worse than eighth. Make a few lineups of him dominating, or even a lineup with him and Kyle Busch together I can see working, doing the little JGR thing up there. But I think Kenseth has looked a lot better recently, especially at 1.5-mile tracks, at least the last two. The beginning of the season was pretty brutal for him, but he's slowly turning it around. I think he has some low-owned domination potential, but I wouldn't go crazy with it. And Jamie McMurray, you can't even play him in cash. He's pretty much just a complete fade here. I don't really care how well he's been doing. I don't even care that he's a lock for the top 10. It's probably going to be on the lower side of the top 10, and him starting fourth is just too high for him with no domination potential. Hamlin, you could play him, I guess. He's had some good finishes here. He has crashed a few times, but he has a couple of third place finishes. He's sort of like Kenseth, except for even less potential than him right now. He's just not looking good this year. But then we get to Ryan Blaney there, starting in sixth, only $8,700. We'd seen him flirt with 9K recently, and this is a pretty good price for him at a 1.5. We've seen him just do amazing here at the 1.5-mile track. You saw him dominate Texas, and last time out, you saw him damn near win back in Kansas. So he's got his win, you know, got his first win out of the way. Blaney could definitely be a really sneaky guy here. I don't think he's going to have the lowest ownership. I think he'll come in right underneath around 20% ownership, but fourth fastest in both practices. Sixth place isn't too bad for him. I think he finishes around there and has a chance to crack the top three, if not win here, because he's just been so good at these 1.5-mile tracks on the year. And this is one where Ford has historically done well. Both his teammates in Keselowski and Logano have had very successful careers here at Kentucky, especially Keselowski. So maybe Keselowski will give him a few pointers on how to succeed here. He doesn't have any real track history. He crashed last year, but was doing pretty good before then. So I like Blaney at sixth as a sneaky contrarian play. And then Kevin Harvick at 9,800. He has a pretty good track record here too, but it's sort of like a higher floor version of Martin Truex Jr.'s history here, because he has no finish better than 8th, but he also has no finish worse than 16th. Back in 2011, he finished 16th here, and then the 5 races after that, he's finished between 7th and 11th. I just said none better than 8th, but actually no better than 7th, but he's been very, very consistent with what he's been doing here, but he has led laps before and had some domination potential, and Harvick is looking a lot better than he was earlier in the season. He's one of the best in the field, I think third best in the field at 1.5-mile intermediate tracks behind Truex and Keselowski this year. So I like Harvick. I think he's going to go a little bit underlooked, and starting 7th isn't bad because I think he works his way up and is the first guy to push for the lead from Truex and Kyle Busch. And right behind him is Jimmy Johnson. He's sort of like Harvick. He did crash last year, but besides then, he has just like an okay, like barely top 10 year after year track history. He's also led. He led a bunch of laps. I think it was 2013. Yeah, 2013 he led 182 laps here with 62 fast laps, and it wasn't off the pole. He started third, but ended up finishing 9th there. But he has dominated here before, and he's always a threat to dominate every week. He's sort of in the same boat as Harvick. I think he's maybe going to get a little bit less ownership, maybe. Oh, who am I kidding? It's Jimmy Johnson. I think he'll get a little more than Harvick. People have been onto Harvick a little bit recently, and Jimmy Johnson hasn't won since Dover, I think, but he's been kind of just chilling, but we saw him last week. Granted, last week doesn't matter at all, but yeah, Jimmy Johnson is someone I like, but with you having to play Kyle Larson and, you know, picking one of Kyle Busch or Martin Truex Jr., he's going to have to be that third guy, and it's hard for me to pick him over Brad Keselowski this week. He will be a little lower owned, so I'll maybe have some lineups where I have some Harvick and Johnson, but that's going to be your second-tier option behind the likes of Brad Keselowski this week. Before we get to Keselowski, I will mention Daniel Suarez starting 9th. I think he's a very nice option. I know that last week doesn't really matter, but this kid's been getting better pretty much every race, and he almost won last week at Talladega. He's been not good at these 1.5-mile tracks, I will admit, but JGR has gotten a lot better. You've got Kyle and Kenseth up at the top there. I think Suarez, who had a very good qualifying, could stay in the top 10 all day, and you might just out of nowhere look and go, what is Suarez doing in like second place, like pulling a Boyer? But I could definitely see him doing that. No one's going to own him starting in the top 10. I say just a little sprinkle with him, but you know, keep it in check. But for only 7,100 in JGR equipment, I know that's what we've said about him all year, but it definitely applies as he's been kind of doing really well under the radar. Brad Keselowski, starting 10th, 10,100. Obviously, I like him a ton. Average driver rating of 131 here and 116 at 1.5-mile intermediate tracks. Has won 50% of this race's races. Yes. it kind of confused me for a second, but he didn't look great at practice. For some reason, a lot of people had the same practice times for both practices. So he was 15th fastest in both practices, which ain't great, but I think he's going to make his way up here. I think, you know, he's been so much better at these 1.5-mile tracks than he usually is this year, and I think he's going to have another win. Honestly, I think Keselowski is probably my favorite to win here. He's gonna do some funky pit stuff with the stages and all that. You know that's gonna happen. Last year he won this thing on fuel mileage. A really nice call there at the end. Finished the last 70 laps on fuel. Had so little fuel when he won. People are thinking he's gonna run out of gas, but he just barely made it because him and Paul Wolf, they're just great at pulling off stuff like that. He had so little gas when he finished, he couldn't even do a burnout. And that was one of the things they said. He said when he won, he just mentioned how it was just a shame for the fans that he couldn't celebrate for us with a nice burnout. But according to the sportsbook odds, granted this was before qualifying and all that, but his odds were the same as Kyle Busch, just slightly behind Truex Jr., the favorite. And ahead of guys like Harvick and Johnson this week. So Keselowski is definitely a strong play. I think he'll get about 30% ownership, but maybe not. You know, he hasn't been very high-owned recently. I think track history will bump him up a little bit, but I think 25 to 30% ownership is about what we're looking at. So you can pivot off of him to Logano, who should bring in about half the ownership at 1,000 less bucks. It's just that track history is just so juicy here. So on to Logano here, starting 11th. $9,000, pretty cheap for him. He had been in a world of hurt recently, ever since his race that was taken away from him, from failing post-qualifying inspection. Logano's been not doing anything good. He finished 3rd last week, but that was a plate race, so that doesn't really count, I guess. People are going to be off Logano. I like using him with Keselowski, doing a little Penske stack there, or even as a pivot off of Keselowski in some lineups where I fade him. But, you know, we just haven't really been seeing it from Logano recently. I feel like the last, like, 3 or 4 times he's raced, I said that maybe this is the race where he finally gets it back together. He kind of got it back together a little bit last week, but, you know, with that being plate racing and all, that was pretty much random. I don't know. This will be a really telling week for me. If he does well here and even puts up some domination, I'm going to be like, yes, finally, this Joey is back. And I'll be using him liberally. But we just really haven't seen it from him recently. So along with the rest of the field, I'm going to kind of tone down my expectations a little bit, but still try to get a little bit overweight, maybe play him around 20%, just because we've seen Fords do really well here. And Chase Elliott, who's $9,500, pretty expensive for him. He's starting 12th, 3rd fastest in final practice. So, you know, I love me some Chase. That's my boy. And starting 12th, he was fastest in qualifying. He actually set the record today during the first qualifying session for fastest qualifying speed. So obviously his qualifying trim is in form. Now, with him starting 12th, it didn't mean that he made the final round of qualifying and then finished last. That was actually his second round of qualifying because the third round was canceled with rain, along with the Xfinity race, which is a shame. You know, I was kind of looking forward to seeing the Xfinity race and seeing how the multi-groove racing would work out, but didn't end up happening. I think it's going to obviously rinse off a bit of the rubber, but I think they're going to reapply it tomorrow. I'll let you guys know in Slack if that's not the case, but I think they're probably going to reapply it. So anyway, back to Chase here. I do like Chase a lot. He's really expensive though, so it's really hard to find him a spot on your roster. He's going to have to take over like the Keselowski spot there, because for the most part, you're going to be going 3 studs, 3 scrubs. That's just how the pricing works out here with you wanting to play all of the $10,000 guys. So You're going to have to make room for Elliott, but I do like his place differential upside starting 12th. That's just good enough to the point where, you know, none of the studs qualified farther back than him. So that's something nice. Outside of Larson, obviously. But he could move up to, like, second or third like he likes to do and not have to worry about dominating to be a really good play with him starting in 12th. So as long as he finishes the top five, he's going to be a good play. And who knows? You know, we've seen him lead laps a lot. Not this year, but last year he led a lot of laps at these 1.5-mile tracks. I want to see him get back to doing that, but I'd just really like to see him win a race finally. Like, Blaney could do it. Dylan could do it. You know, all these guys, Stenhouse or whatever this year, have been getting their first wins. Why can't Chase? He always seems to just lose it at the end and finish second or third. But, you know, if that happens this week, he's still a good play. So I do like Chase. I'm going to try to find a way to fit him into rosters. Just, I don't really want to fade Kaz for it, and you have to play Larson, so it is tough. Down to Dale Earnhardt Jr., starting 13th. He's been just in a really bad place this season. This would be his last Kentucky race and all of that. Just not a lot of interest. I know he has done well, and he's gotten a lot of fast laps at these 1.5-mile tracks, averaging about 14 fast laps. But, you know, I just can't really play Dale Earnhardt Jr. I think a lot of the field is just so done with him. Yeah, and that's all there really is to say about him. $8,200 is still a bit expensive. We were seeing him in the $7,000 range. But, yeah, no interest there. Underneath him are a few pretty interesting middling options. Eric Jones at $7,900 starting 14th, and Kurt Busch at $8,100 starting 16th. Or 15th. And then you have Clint Bowyer at $8,400 starting 16th. All three of these guys are kind of the same plays. They'll have ownership like in the low teens, maybe a little bit more ownership for like Bowyer starting 16th. And with all the studs starting top 10, it's kind of a double-edged sword here with these guys because they do have more place differential upside than the studs, but at the same time, they have to get around the studs to actually do that. The way it's set up is that unless you're going to punt like super low, you're going to take three expensive studs and then three guys in like the $6,000 and $7,000 range. So it's going to be hard to find a way to get guys like Clint Bowyer, especially, or Kurt Busch into your lineup without having to go down into the 5,000s, if not the 4,000s, for your last guy. So that's the issue here. I could definitely see any of these guys being in the optimal lineup, be it Jones, Busch, or Bowyer. A top three will do it, really. Maybe a top five. And these guys could all post top fives with a handful of fast laps, but none of them have like a crazy dominator upside or any dominator upside, really. Although we have seen Eric Jones cheese out some lead laps recently on the last several races, I think. So he might have the most upside here, and I don't think his ownership is going to break like 15%. So I guess I like Jones out of all of them, with them being the cheapest and all, but it's going to be hard to use them. Next we have Bubba Wallace, $6,300 starting 17th. I do like that play a lot. You're going to be forced into the $6,000 range a lot this week, and there are several options. And he's probably qualified the highest of all the options that we're going to look at. But Almirola has always done very well here. You know that Fords do well here. And he's looked really good in his car since that first race. He was 9th fastest in final practice. I think he moves up from 17th or stays right around there. And that could be value at only $6,300 compared to everyone else in his price range. You know, if these place differential guys in like starting like 25th through 28th or 29th or so, some of these guys I'll mention here coming up, if they don't really pan out, then this little range right here of like, you know, 17th to about 22nd, 23rd, this is kind of like a hidden trove. Looking at the positional scoring summary that we have on the cheat sheet here, looking at average fantasy points based on where you start at here, first through fifth, averaged 43 fantasy points, of course, with a huge drop-off from the 6th to 10th starting position at 28, 30 for 11th through 15th. But the second highest average for fantasy points actually comes from the 16th to 20th starting position. They average about 36 fantasy points here. So that's something really cool to note. And anyone starting 31st or farther back averages 14 or 15 fantasy points. There's just a huge drop-off, as where guys starting in the 20s average about 25 fantasy points. So just a huge scaling drop-off. Seems like you want to have guys starting in the top 5, then guys starting from 16th to 20th, which is the hidden cove of value here this week. And then maybe some guys starting 26th through 30th. You don't really need to reach down into the range of 30s, especially like 35 and under, outside of Kyle Busch, or not Kyle Busch, but Kyle Larson, obviously. So getting back on track, that's why I like Bubba Wallace a lot this week. I'll be playing a ton of him. He's been very low owned pretty much every week, and he was one of the keys to victory last week, as he had a really great running, almost won. Ended up not winning at Daytona, but him and Ty Dillon and David Reagan all had chances to win there at the end, so it was a crazy one. But really like what I've seen from Bubba, and I really like this 43 car here at this track. Like I said, Almirola always killed it here, so I love me some Bubba. I'm going to play him, and he's not going to be high owned, which is fantastic. Last week's winner, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., starting 18th. Two-time winner this year. I do like him a lot. I hate the fact that he's a two-time winner now, because he should be going under the radar, but right now he's on the top of everyone's radar. Now, maybe people will think, oh, well, he won restrictor plate races. Maybe we'll tone it back a little for this week, but, you know, I don't know if that's going to happen. He is starting in the teens, so maybe people gravitate more towards a guy starting in the 20s. So he'll keep his ownership under the 20% line, but I'm going to be using him a lot this week. He's a guy that the Domination Station and the projections like a lot. He's been outstanding at these 1.5-mile tracks all year. Him and Trevor Bayne, both around 80 driver rating, which is great for guys in the $7,000 and $6,000 here. I like them both. They're starting back-to-back with Stenhouse starting 18th, and Bayne starting 19th, so I'll lump Bayne into this discussion here, because he, along with Stenhouse, has really good track history here as well. Bayne's finished 11th and 13th with Stenhouse, so he crashed last year, but before that he finished 11th, 25th, and 17th here, and he was doing really good last year as well until he got involved in that accident. So I like Stenhouse a lot this week. I'll be using him. I also like Bayne, and I like playing them together as well, doing the little Roush stack. And another Ford that people might notice a bit this week, because she had a top 10 practice session, that's Danica Patrick at only $6,000. She's starting 20th, which ain't too great, but it's not enough to make you want to fade her. She did finish 17th here last year. I don't think she's that great of a play, but she is really cheap. If you need to use her, sure, but I'd be more inclined to go towards Darrell Wallace in this price range, or even Michael McDowell, or David Reagan, or especially Castle, cheaper than that. But Danica, just a light sprinkle, but I don't think she has like the best upside. I do like that she's in a Ford, and you know I'm high on Fords this week. Michael McDowell, 5,900, still not as respected as he should be. He has an abysmally bad track record here. Three races, raced 11 to 13, and he's never finished better than 38th. He pretty much crashes or has an engine failure every time here, but he hasn't raced here in 3 years. Now, he's been great this year, but he has really done well at tracks that aren't intermediate tracks, like the short tracks. The restrictor plates obviously finished fourth last week. Looked really good there. And maybe they'll bring his ownership up a little bit, but he's qualified a little bit too high. And that has been the thing with McDowell this year, is that he's qualified higher than you expect, but time after time, with his price always being so low, We've seen him, like, in the optimal lineups and GPPs, like last week, or we've seen him just overperform what we expect of him, and who knows what to expect anymore. Starting 21st, I don't think he's gonna, like, come top 10 or whatever. Be so cheap that maybe if he just stays in place, he'll end up being, maybe not in the optimal, but just a pretty good play. I'm still gonna fade just because he qualified just a little too high for me. But I say that right as I'm about to offer this next guy, who's not really a whole lot better than McDowell. But, you know, I don't really care, because I have a cool story to tell about this guy. Not like a cool story, maybe like a cool story bro kind of thing, but I will say this. Last year, Chris Buescher qualified, I think, like 36th out of 40 guys. I used him in every single lineup because he, for some reason, his car is just like practicing out of his mind. Like, he had like top 8 practice times every practice session. And somehow, like, he ended up getting loose, I think, and only qualified 36th. He had like no ownership. I played him in, I think, like 80% of the lineups, maybe 90%. Like, I was just all over him. He was my all-in play of the week. And I was there at the race. I was watching him pretty much the whole time. One of the best things about being at the race, especially at a 1.5-mile track where everything is in eyesight and you can even see the back straight away and pretty much tell who's who. I was following Buescher a lot, and his car was lightning. Like, he was so fast. Like, his practice times were telling the truth. And I was like, God damn. I was watching. He was just going around cars that on a normal week he would have no business going around. He made his way all the way up to 15th, and then pow! Larson just ran into him. Bam. He was out of there, finished like last. And that's why Kentucky sucked last week, or last year. So I was all over Keselowski and all that. Just the all-in thing on Buescher, and bam. So that's life. And I think he makes for an extremely sneaky play this week. I like him a lot. He's really good at these 1.5-mile tracks for somewhat of his price range, right? Now, he is a little bit probably more expensive than he should be. He qualified a little higher than he should, but at the last few 1.5-mile tracks, like, he's been great. He's been, like, the value play. I think he's been on some optimal lineups. I just think Buescher is going to go under 10% owned. Maybe easily. Maybe it'll be like 8%, but I have him at 10% right now just to be safe. I think he's going to be a really nice leverage play in this range because I think a lot of people are going to overuse the guys starting a little bit under him. And I think he has just as good of a car, maybe not as good of a car, but as good of a chance as these guys of just staying in place, if not sneaking up a few spots. So anyway, now on to this. Continuing down this 20s range, you've got Kasey Kahne starting 23rd. This is a play I like a lot. Kane's got a lot to prove right now. Probably not going to be with Hendricks after this next season. And we also heard that Kenseth is likely to not re-sign with JGR. I don't know if it's re-signing or whatever. He said he wasn't going to be back with JGR next year. But Kasey Kahne pretty much in the same boat. Looking for a ride, really needs a win. Probably needs a win more than anyone in this field. So, this man is hungry. I know that's a really dumb bit of analysis to use, but he's one of those guys that's getting desperate. And he's been good. Like, we've seen him sneaking into the top fives all the time, just out of nowhere towards the end of the race. And he's also been qualifying on the lower end. He's been a really good play when he hasn't, you know, qualified last and crashed out. He's done a few times this year. I don't think the crash is going to be there. He's really good at Kentucky. Finished 2nd in 2012, 14th last year, 8th in 2014, 11th in 2013. Really consistent and solid history. Has been good at the 1.5-mile tracks this year with a driver rating of 78. So I think he can make his way into the top 10, if not the top 5. And he's only 7,700, starting 23rd. I like that play a lot. I think he's going to be fairly popular. Maybe 20 to 25% owned. I'd probably stack him with the likes of Chase Elliott and Jimmy Johnson. That's kind of the way I like going about it. But I'm going to use him pretty liberally and hope that the guys that qualified a bit underneath him and are a little bit cheaper maybe take away from his ownership. But we have seen Kane be the chalk before, so if everyone out there starts recommending Kane as a play, I'd say get off of him, maybe go to some of these more contrarian guys. Paul Menard is someone who has some track history here. He's starting 24th and is only 6,800, and that's about like the average price for him. But he's finished top 18 in the last three times here at Kentucky. But granted, he has not looked good this year. Only a 50 driver rating at these 1.5s, but you know he's going to be low owned. He's going to be like under 10%. So as a direct leverage play off of Kane, I could see that being a good move. But as far as the projections and stuff are looking, obviously I have to project Kane and, you know, Dylan behind him as better plays than Menard, but he's someone to consider. His practice times are just not great, like 29th and 26th. Not wonderful, but I don't know. Just he could be the sneaky guy, but he's probably a safe fade if you want to go a different route here. Austin Dillon, 7,600, starting 25th. He's going to be a popular play here. Last time out at a 1.5-mile track, he won back at Charlotte. He practiced all right, like 20th and 22nd, just a little bit better than where he qualified. And he's been just middling at this track. I think he'll just go up a few spots and kind of chill there. So I kind of like him as a fade candidate since I do think he'll be popular. So maybe pivot on to like a Reagan or a Menard in this range, or if you're going by salary range, maybe Casey Kane will be a better option to go to, because I think he's going to be a little bit lower owned than Dylan, especially with the win altering his 1.5 stats a lot. Like, probably looks better than it really is. So that's how I'm going with Dylan here. Before we get to the next Dylan, which I like a lot, we got to talk about David Reagan. He's still only $5,400. You can pretty much throw out what he did last week, but Reagan has looked a lot better over the last couple of months on the NASCAR circuit, and he comes in with some all right track history here. Like, he started off back in 2011 finishing 8th, and then the last 2 years with these low downforce packages, he's finished 22nd and 18th. He starts 26th. He's going to be well under 10% ownership. I like him a lot for that. I think that he probably doesn't finish better than Dylan or Kane more times than not, but if you just consider ownership percentage, you know, if Dylan's going to be three times higher owned than Reagan, I don't think he has a three times better shot of finishing better than Reagan or scoring more points, and he's like $2,000 more expensive. So that might be my reasoning for playing Reagan right there. Just another one of these contrarian plays to consider. Now, going on to perhaps one of my favorite plays, Ty Dillon, 6,700, starting 27th. Now, I do think he'll be a little popular, probably around 20% owned. He's been really good to us recently, and I really love the stat on him. It's a great stat. He has finished on the lead lap 13 of 15 races this year. I think it's 16, actually. 13 of 16 races this year, which, if you look at it salary-wise, I know he's kind of gone up in salary a bit, but he's been priced along with the guys like Allmendinger, who has 8 lead lap finishes, or Buescher, who has 8. You know, a guy like Reagan only has like 4. He's got 13, which is just excellent. He sticks around. He doesn't go laps behind, and that's going to be key here. You're going to need to finish on the lead lap. Finished 25th last year in his first time out, which was not bad. Not bad at all. I think that was in Tony Stewart's ride, though, so it might be a little bit misleading. But I think he's in an even better spot this year. He's been really good in that number 13 Germain Chevy. So I like Ty Dillon. He's been so good to me. He was my highest owned play last week and almost won the race. Oh, that would have been great. Almost won the race. But, yeah, I don't know. That's just been my guy lately. Ty Dillon, keep going back to him. He's going to keep delivering. He's the man. AJ Allmendinger, I think him starting 28th, if it wasn't for Ryan Newman right behind him, he would be, like, really popular. But I think he's actually going to get kind of shuffled down here just because there are plays around him like Dylan and Menard and Kane and Dylan and Reagan and Dylan. But mostly Newman. Newman's going to be very chalky. But Allmendinger starting 28th, probably about 20% owned or so. And he has a really bad track record here. Like, crashed last year. Has one top 10. Outside of that, no finish better than 22nd. He's not been good on 1.5-mile tracks. It's just not his thing. He likes flat tracks. He likes short tracks, road courses. That's his jam. Starting 28th, this is pretty much what he does every time at one of these 1.5s. Low qualifying positions, so you play him, and then he just does nothing. Chills in, like, 30th all day. I think we're going to see that again. Maybe he'll be, like, okay. I'm still going to use him a bit because he could go up to 20th and be all right. And he's really cheap at 6,500. I think his struggles at tracks like this have been taken into account with his price a little bit. But I do think he's going to be popular, especially with DraftKings adding a starting position onto the mobile app now. People will see the starting 28th and just kind of play him because it's a name that people know. And people see that he's done well recently at, like, these short tracks or whatever. But Allmendinger, I don't really like a whole lot, and so I'll go underweight on him. And now to the chalk. The chalk. I think Ryan Newman is the chalk. Maybe 30% ownership. That's where I'm pegging it right now. He's starting 29th. Last year he finished 3rd. Also finished 3rd in 2014, 4th in 2011. So he's very good at this track, very good at 1.5s. You know, his average driver rating here, 92. Average running position, 12th. And he's starting 29th. On paper, it's perfect. But in the garage, he's having some problems, honestly. Not going to lie here. He's going to the rear of the field. His engine blew out on him. Going to a backup car. And it's not like he's on a... You know, he's not. It's not like he's on one of these elite teams that's going to give him a nice little ride. Or just sort of like Jimmy Johnson, where he goes to a backup and still wins the race. I think he's going to underperform, and he's going to be so chalky. I'm thinking about getting off him a little. He's just in such a good spot. Projects out as one of the top value plays outside of Larson. So you can play him. In cash, you lock him in for sure. In tournaments, though, I think he's a fade candidate, honestly. I think going to guys like Kane, Austin Dillon, Ty Dillon, even like Allmendinger, Menard, if you want to go there, Reagan, Buescher, going to be better options than Newman just because his ownership is going to be, like, crazy. And I'm pretty sure everyone's going to recommend him with the lack of place differential plays out there, because after Ryan Newman, there ain't nothing but Larson. All Larson, because you look at 30th place, Matt DiBenedetto. No one's going to play him. Ryan Sieg, 31st. No, 0% ownership. 1% ownership, maybe. Cole Witt, 32nd. People do know him, but not in the lower 30s, so no, you don't play him. You don't play Reed Sorensen starting 33rd. You don't. Maybe you play Joey Gaze. We've only seen Gaze at plate track so far this year, so... we've seen him at, like, Talladega and whatnot. So I don't know how Gaze is going to do. He has done well every time he's raced. And for some reason, the Vegas books always put him as, like, a 200-to-1 instead of a 1,000-to-1. But he was last in the first practice, so not that encouraging. So you can't really play him at 34th. Basically, the only guy you can play in this range besides Larson is Landon Castle, starting 35th. He's finished in the last 3 years here. He's finished 29th, 28th, 32nd, crashed in 2013, and he finished 25th and 23rd in 2012 and 2011. That's pretty much the ceiling you're going to get out of him. In a week like this, he's not going to finish on the lead lap. He'll finish a lap or maybe two down, finish like 30th. But starting 35th, maybe that's when you can start. You know, he's just so cheap at 5,500. But I still wouldn't play him over a guy like, Newman, Dylan, Allmendinger, Menard. Those guys, definitely higher upside, just better plays. But if you need to go cheap, I guess Castle is where you're going to have to go. And I think he'll be a little bit popular just because he's really the only guy in a good spot here. You know, Going on further, you're not going to play Jeffrey Earnhardt starting 36th, or at least you better not. You can't possibly play McLeod starting 37th because he's not on DraftKings system. I really wish that he would win. Really want him to pull a Chris Buescher and win, because that would be freaking hilarious if no one could roster the winner. It's not going to happen, though. Going down, you'd have to... This is where you have to really, really like to gamble. But maybe, there's maybe a chance that you can play Timmy Hill at 4,800. Who has been better? Who has been better the last few races? Go look, he's finished in the 20s his last few races. I know he's in a crap car. His number 66 Chevy, but he's 4,800. If you want to play four studs, you're going to have to consider either Timmy Hill or, starting 39th, my guy this week, Gray Gaulding. Now, I understand that Gray Gaulding has one lead lap finish this year. Timmy Hill is zero, though, makes him a better play. But Gaulding has been okay. Just like Hill, you look at his last few races that he's actually raced, he's done all right. He's snuck in some fast laps. He's at the 1.5-mile tracks this year. Earnhardt and Hill have 29 and 28 driver ratings. He's at 33.7. It's not terrible. It's right there with like Reed Sorensen. But he's starting 39th. If he can get past Timmy Hill, Jeffrey Earnhardt, I know he can do that. Maybe past Gaze and Sorensen and Sieg and maybe Witt. It's all he has to do. All he has to do at 4,500... You're going to need to play him in some lineups, because you're going to want four stud lineups, at least a few four stud lineups. You're going to want to play a lineup that has like maybe, you know, Larson, and then like one of Kyle Busch and Martin Truex Jr., then Keselowski, and then maybe you want to jam in a Johnson or a Harvick. If you want to do that, you got to go to Gray Gaulding and then get like one more scrub. Promise you, it'll be okay. I know he's going to get passed in 1 millisecond by Larson, and he's going to be like, oh my god, what would he be at if if he finished 40th? He would only get 3 points, but he's guaranteed at least 3 points. He's not going to put up a negative 15 or a negative 30 like some guys. He's only 4,500. There's a chance. You should play him in just a few lineups, as long as it helps you get four studs in there. Just in case that is the move, or there are multiple dominators, you can get 1, 2, 3, 4. So yeah, that's my little advertisement for, hey, play Gray Gaulding, because he's not going to be higher than like 3% owned. But that's just my little sneaky guy. Granted, the only person qualified worse than him is Timmy Hill, or the only person that practiced worse than him is Timmy Hill, and Timmy Hill managed to somehow beat him out in qualifying. But still, Gaulding, maybe. And then, of course, in 40th starting position is Kyle Larson, which I've already talked about him. He's a very good play and will be the highest owned play this year, perhaps. But that'll do it for Taco's Fast 40. I know Brady wasn't here, but he's got his articles out. Go check them out on the website, dfsarmy.com. Promo code Taco. Please remember to use promo code Taco, because it helps support the podcast. I guess it'll help encourage me to do more of these. I know I've missed the last few, and I'm very sorry about that, but either I've been sick myself, or I've had a very sick baby. Last few weeks, I've had a really sick baby, even having to worry about July 4th holiday and all that crap. It's out of the way. On to some Kentucky racing. Love me some Kentucky racing. It should be a good one. So, forgot to mention, huge shout-out. Congratulations last week to Dove Rambler. Using the Domination Station last week, he took down the $9, the Mega Beast. $9 Mega Beast for a sweet $50,000. So it was awesome to have an Army helmet up top. Can we do that again, guys? Let's do it again this week. It's $8 this week. Another $50,000 grand prize. Let's bring it home. So that's all for me this week. Good luck at Kentucky, and I will see you next week on the Taco's Fast 40.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as the secrets to unlocking a new level to your game.